Hello and welcome to the Urbanist Monocle's programme all about the built environment. I'm your host, Andrew Tuck. We're off to the French Riviera this week as Cannes plays host to MIPIM, the world's leading property fair. Over 20,000 people have gathered here for the event, including investors, developers, local authorities, urban experts and civic leaders, all working towards the future of our built environment. We sit down with the mayors of Hanover, Vilnius and Copenhagen to talk about their respective cities' ambitions towards a greener future.
One of the reasons that Copenhagen is thriving, livable city, is because from the very beginning we have thought about how can we make the energy of the city also make that green.
Explore the power of collaboration as we hear from Turkey's Design Council on the efforts to rebuild the urban areas devastated by last year's earthquakes. And hear how hospitality continues to play a key role in what happens in our cities.
I think we were surprised at how well the sector bounced back, both in terms of the people who are willing to invest in the sector and the travellers who are coming to our hotels.
All that and more, including a new master plan for Muscat's downtown, and we speak with the president of Reba too. That's all ahead over the next 30 minutes on The Urbanist, coming to you from MIPIM. Stay tuned. So welcome to this week's programme, coming to you from MIPIM in Cannes. If there's one thing we know for certain, it's that urban issues are global issues. The tagline of this year's edition is the Global Urban Festival. It shows how urbanism has stopped being a niche subject and become a vital part of our everyday lives. One issue that has been permeating debates in cities across the globe is mobility. And one German mayor has made it his ambition to deliver a car-free city centre over the coming years. Bellet Onne is the Lord Mayor of Hanover. And we talked about his green ambitions, even if Volkswagen is the biggest local employer.
The automotive industry is also changing. They have to change to e-mobility, and I think they have to define the role of the cars for the future in the cities, especially in urban areas, totally in a different way since it was in the last 50, 60, 70 years. So I think Hanover and all the other cities in Germany are struggling with the organization of mobility, transport, logistics in our cities. And we see that if we organize the transformation and try to find a new way of transport, of public transport, more cycle-friendly roads, more space for the pedestrians, for example. It's a huge chance for the cities, especially the city centers, to reorganize the different areas, responding to the climate change, for example, responding to the social challenges we are facing. And this is what we are trying to do in Hanover. We started in 2020 with a very big participative way of involving the industry, involving the different companies we have in our city, and involving the people who are living in our city, to talk about like the transport, the mobility of tomorrow. How do you want to organize? Do you want us to organize the mobility in our city? And this process was very, very successful. At the end, we have like a new mobility plan for a city with a car-free city center where we can organize much more space for people, for kids, for people who are like disabled, for example, and also want to use mobility and transportation in our city. And this is the chance we see in our cities, in the new space we are creating without cars, more green, more water, more climate-friendly areas and spaces in our city. And this is what we are like right now doing in our city, in our family.
It's certainly not the most remarkable thing about you, but one of the interesting things about your background is that you're from a family with Turkish roots, mm-hmm. and you're, the first person elected as a state capital mayor, an extraordinary achievement in many ways. How significant did you feel that was when you got elected? When did you realize that this was a moment of change for Germany as well as yourself?
For me, it is a part of my life. I was born in 1981 in Germany as the first generation of my family who was born in Germany. My parents came from Turkey, from Istanbul to a small town close to Hanover. And for me, actually, until the early 90s, it was totally normal having a Turkish background. I had a lot of kids around with Italian Serbo-Croatian or Greek background, so it was totally normal to grow up in this kind of diversity, in a very diverse society. But in the early 90s, we had a pushback coming up, the very violent attacks, an arson attack on a Turkish family, for example, in Solingen, where five persons died. And at that time, I realized that it makes a difference where you come from, what your religion is, what your background is, your family background, and so on. And this was the moment where I got more and more political. So I started to realize the difference in Germany, the struggling of the German society with like immigration, with the difference in the diversity in the community. And for me, it was the motivation to start a political career, to change this and create a more diverse and immigrant-friendly city and also a community. And this is something where I work on almost every day.
Another city leader working towards a greener future is Valdas Benkunskas, who's the mayor of Vilnius. The Lithuanian capital was elected as European Green Capital 2025 for its strong commitment to sustainability while keeping a realistic and down-to-earth approach. We wanted to find out more.
Changing city is never-ending story, never-ending path. According to the all situation in the world, in our geopolitical level or even in such kind of areas like green transformation, you need always improve your city politics. So at the moment we are working on progress on our infrastructure. We need to do a lot because we are independent for 34 years. So we have a lot of heritage of Soviet Union times. So all the reconstruction, conversion of all our areas, facilities, streets, and so on should be done.
When you look at some of the practical things you've done already, before we started this interview, you mentioned looking at the energy used for public transport, that this had been a big step forward. Tell us some of the practical things that have already been achieved.
We're trying to take every opportunity we can, using funds, getting knowledge of all new investments, all new technologies, which are possible at the moment. So, for example, we're using RRF money for the moment in order to produce local hydrogen in our public transportation company. And this hydrogen will be used in our new buses, which are upcoming as well. We won Green City Capital title for 2025. So our goal is, to make that before or by 2030, Vilnius should be, zero emission city. So the main point we are working is public transportation and central heating system, which should be renovated, new equipment should be installed, new bicycles should be bought. So there are a lot of projects at the moment. For example, we also use a lot of solar power system for our buildings, kindergarten, schools, hospitals, more than 1,000 buildings are used now solar system, and that's helping us, to have energy independence.
Now, what works in one place might not necessarily work in another. But if there's one city that is often referred to as a model to follow when it comes to sustainability, it's Copenhagen. Monocle's Carlotta Ribello caught up with Sophie Herstrup Andersen, the Lord Mayor of Copenhagen. And she started by asking what it's like to have that responsibility.
Well, it is quite a big responsibility because some of the things that Copenhagen is really known about in the whole world is not only bike lines, it's also happiness. And some of the things that we can see in these years is that Copenhagen is very popular, which is fortunate, but that also means that more people want to come and live in Copenhagen, and that puts a pressure on our housing market. And if we don't live up to the expectations and get to build more housing in the upcoming years, both social housing and private housing, rental, owning, the cost of living will be raised up to a point where the city no longer is for everybody. And that is a big responsibility to make sure that the city is for everybody and every time of your lifetime.
Now, there's also your role within the C40s organization. And of course, that is interlinked with your role as Lord Mayor and this idea of the green, sustainable urban development. So I guess I'm interested in hearing from you. How do you build in a more sustainable way and bearing in mind the resiliency that the city needs in order to be safe-proof from climate change, from its predicted growth that we know is going to happen? How do you make a more resilient city?
So Copenhagen have very comprehensive plans when it comes to, for instance, some of the big changes that we see right now with climate, when it comes to cloud bursts, and when it comes to making sure that the rising sea level is something that we take into account when we develop the city. And we have very comprehensive plans for that that takes into account both the private and the public. When we develop the city and we work together with the big companies who supply us with water and energy and things like that. And that makes the resiliency of the city very high. But it's also something that we need to plan for. And in the next Copenhagen municipality plan that we are deciding upon here in 2024 at the end of the year, we are taking into account new parts of the city where we are doing urban planning and where we are opening up for 40,000 more apartments and housing. At the same time, planning for making an area where we are protecting the city from the rising sea level and making sure that we can also develop that in the future, 2035 and beyond that.
We spoke at the beginning about this idea of learning from Copenhagen. What do you think are some of the most valuable lessons that when you meet with your partners, be it through the network or through, you know, private meetings, but what are they keen to learn from you and what do you feel has the most impact?
One of the reasons, or many of the reasons, that Copenhagen is thriving, livable city is because from the very beginning we have thought about how can we make the energy of the city also make that green. And that makes the city as such, when it comes to renewable energy and stuff like that, we build on a grid that is common, that is connective, and that in itself is very good for the environment. We are also working in a way where we always do the city planning, where we look at infrastructure before housing, so that we make sure that infrastructure, metro system or buses, are following up on where do people live, where are they going, where's the education, where are the jobs. And we take into account that every part of the city should have a mix of both living and working. So we don't have special areas where you only work or special areas where you only live. We think that the 15 minutes city set up by architect Carlos Moreno and Danish architect Jan Gehl is the way that we should move the city forward, where we think about city life at first and human life before we make actual buildings and architecture. And that is something that most people actually learn from Copenhagen is the green city planning. The way that we do infrastructure with bike lanes and the infrastructure, and then, of course, the renewable energy grid that we work upon.
Next, we turn our focus to Hatay in southern Turkey, where the Turkish Design Council is overseeing a major project to rebuild the city, which was decimated in last year's earthquakes. I caught up with Chair Mehmet Kalyonku.
Everybody is focused on building, but you can never build if you don't have a plan. So designing the city again, which is a historical heritage coming from the Roman Empire, is very challenging process. I can say it is one of the most sophisticated urban problems this century. The reason is after post-crisis environments, people are not very patient, of course. It is very normal. But designing and planning is something that you should consider being made in a very good designed environment.
Now, you brought in Foster and Partners to do a big part of the urban plan to look at how you rebuild the city. How changed is it from the template of the city that you had before? Because often after these terrible issues, people want to move back to where they live, to the same street, the same building. Tell us how the urban plan will change or not change the way that the city is run.
The plan is a central plan. So the DNA of the plan, we are preserving it. But the building standards and the livability was not good. So we increased green spaces. The mobility strategy is more based on pedestrians and bikers rather than cars, which the city was really occupied by cars. Redesigning the city is enabling the people reshaping their habits, which they are making daily. So we are paying a good attention to social spaces, open and closed social spaces, to increase the communication between the members of the city. But I can say the main characteristics are preserved, the city plan, but by every standard, it is increased in terms of green space, social areas, mobility, transportation, energy efficiency. It is now in a much better situation.
You're working with a lot of local architects, Turkish architects. You're also bringing in Bjarke Engel's company, Big, to work with you. How do you divide up all the projects? Who's doing what? What's the vision?
Yeah, this is the very tricky part. We have 48 offices, design bureaus, engineering rig bureaus, and so on, and 10 academic consultants. And everybody has an idea, of course. Listening all of them, but not talking too much, I can say, is the main trick here. Because if you, as the main person at the table, listen more than you talk, everybody tends to do the same. Then there is less conflict.
This rebuilding effort is also underway in Ukraine, where, despite the war continuing in the background, a new exciting project is hoping to deliver a new autonomous city in the coming years. To find out more about Vlasny Misto, we spoke with the COO, Zenia Lavrentieva.
So you can see on our stand that it's Vlasny Misto for Ukraine. And it was our main aim from MIPIM to show the international firms, international banks and international community in development that Ukraine are not stopped in the development. We are not stopping. We are really going. We are going a big steps for understanding the new urban standard, the new urban and the new standards of building city for citizens, but not for the cars.
And tell me about the project. So what are you hoping to build?
We are building a city for 32,000 citizens, but it will be almost autonomic city from different problems and so on, because when we saw the customer journey map of our target audience of the citizen, we understand that we want to close every of the problem, every of the pain of our target audience. That's why we understand that we had to be autonomic in energy sector. We had to be autonomic in a food and waste. We had to be sustainable. We had to have education, medical, and the places where they can just share their time with their families. That was the vision. The vision is the city for citizens and also the synergy of different economic sectors.
Our next stop takes us to Oman, as the nation is developing its 2040 vision to deliver a series of master plans for both Muscat and the mountain towns. Ibrahim Al-Wali is the executive director of Urban National Strategy at Oman, and he told me about this vision.
Yeah, 2040 vision has many aspects to it and many priorities. The key one is about the people and society. We're talking about creating projects that uplift, you know, the living standards for the people of Oman and the people also who would like actually to participate and live in Oman in the coming future. A key change in our policy and philosophy is actually to open up the country for residential and job creation, job seekers, to be actually in the country in many years to come.
So tell us about the two projects that are here. There's a new coastal project that's been announced, yeah. And the winner of that is the offices of Zaha Hadid. And it's a big project. It's office, it's light rail, it's hospitality, residential. Why did you think you needed this project? What's the aim for this?
Yeah, so that project is one of the key projects that we're actually embarking on in the near future. Zaha Hadid as a firm is helping us in designing that project. The key aspects of the project, it's a waterfront in the heart of the capital. Today we have 1.5 million living in Muscat. And that number will increase to 2.7. So we're almost doubling by 2040. And for that, we need, you know, to introduce world-class residential, mixed-use, hospitality, as well as offices and retail products that people can actually participate and live in a place like that and work in a place like that. It's in the heart of the city. It's 10 minutes away from the international airport. It's meant to be just under a million square meter of land area. And we're going to drill a canal to introduce a more waterfront in the location. But there is also a marina that we will introduce as a reclamation of the land into the sea. The area in total is about 2 million square meters of GFA to be offered to real estate developers. And that's why we are here today in MIPIM.
Now, the other project that's here, Jabal al-Akhda, is tapping into that mountain culture that we were talking about. Three distinct villages to be delivered again as part of the 2040 vision, a mix of residential and hotels. What is the tourist offer? Who comes to Amman? How are you trying to position yourselves?
Yeah, the mountain destination, first of all, its temperature varies between 0 and 30 degrees, summer and winter. So it has the ability to create destination for different type of festivals across the year, you know. And the idea there is actually to create a balanced destination. So it's about 2,000 keys of hospitality and about 2,500 residential units. So it's a little town, it's not too big, but it's also not too small, to ensure, you know, the niche quality that is required by the end users is established, but also to create, you know, a community for sustainability of that town. It will be targeting the different customers from the Gulf. So we're talking about people who would like to escape the heat in summer, and instead of flying for long destinations, they can actually also come and drive easily to a place like Al Jabal Akhdar. It's going to be high end. The offers that will be there is also for that kind of people, but at the same time, it will be contextual. So the balance that we're trying to achieve in that particular project is being contextual as well as contemporary at the same time.
Over the past few years, some thought that the future of the hospitality industry might have been rather uncertain at this point. But if there's something evident here at MIPIM, it's that the statement couldn't be further from the truth. One particular brand that has full confidence in the sector is Hyatt, and its Vice President of Development and Acquisitions for Europe, Felicity Black-Roberts, told me more.
We've been quite opportunistic in order to fulfil our strategy to get the coverage that we wanted across Europe. We've now got the capital cities, we're now moving into secondary cities, we're looking at different segments within the cities where we're now present, and of course we're expanding our leisure portfolio with the number of resorts that we acquired via the ALG acquisition.
Now, one of the interesting things you told us earlier on was that actually the world of business travel has not gone away at all and is pretty robust here in Europe. Are you surprised how robust it has remained? Because everyone in the pandemic was like, okay, this is over, there'll be no more business travel ever. Did you keep your wits about you then as well?
I think we were surprised at how well the sector bounced back, both in terms of the people who are willing to invest in the sector and the travellers who are coming to our hotels. And yes, I was faced with a number of those doom merchants. You know, there's never going to be another Frankfurt Book Fair and it's all dead. And it's come back. And it's a testimony to how human beings want to do business. They want to be face-to-face, have eye contact, be in the same room. And we really see that that facilitates the way we do business. So why would it be different for the people who are using our hotels?
Now, one of the big things that will be discussed here at MIPIM and is a conversation in every boardroom is sustainability and what that variously means to different people, but how you can deliver on that for shareholders, for customers, for everybody. The hotel industry is quite an interesting one because often some of the assets might be a century old. Actually going in and ripping out the aircon is not something you can do over a weekend. And they're going to be legacy buildings with some issues for some time to come. And even when you do new builds, it's difficult because then you're building new properties. So for you, when you look at this really thorny issue, is it difficult to know where to begin? Or do you have to kind of say, look, we can strive for perfection, but when you have all these legacy buildings, there's always going to be a bit of a tricky issue?
The hotel industry across the board has this problem. And I think brands like Hyatt, we have to have strong ESG policies to make sure that as far as possible, we're guiding our owners and helping our owners to move towards more sustainable solutions. Where we're in control of the operation, obviously we're looking very carefully at the issues around food waste. They almost feel like we're tinkering at the edges sometimes because, to your point, you know, the bigger point is around the buildings that we're occupying and how sustainable they can be. And I think that is a challenge for us as an industry. And certainly as an organisation and even on a personal level, yeah, there's lots of kind of conversations going on about how we're going to move the industry forward. And I think it's something that's high on the agenda now, especially for the lenders, and that will hopefully push the whole industry forward.
MIPIM is a chance for companies, nations and cities to flex their branding muscles and show what the trends for the sector in their respective regions indicate. One place that was full of optimism was the UK, which was involved in a series of domestic and international projects. I spoke with Muyiwa Oki, the president of REBA, the Royal Institute of British Architects, to find out more.
My job and responsibility, I believe, it's about connecting, making sure that our chartered members, chartered practices, have the access to the potential clients, they have access to panels, talks, discussions, and basically get a temperature of where investors, clients are looking to invest in and how they can help solve their problems, really. And also, I'm here to talk about what we are advocating for in the UK, how we as architects are leading the way in the climate emergency through net zero carbon building standard, creating a level playing field for how we can have an impact in this sort of global discussion.
Well, let's start at home. It's an election year, two key parties lining up hopefully to bring some change and opportunity to the country. Yeah. Big issues facing you in this world, a lack of affordable housing, a general housing shortage, many towns decimated when it comes to retail, hollowed out, needing social change as well. Mm-hmm. Are you lobbying both parties ahead of the election to see what they can do for this?
Yeah, very much so. We have been convening roundtables and I've been very fortunate to be invited to roundtables by both parties. What we're making the case for is that the built environment has a major impact on prosperity of our towns and regions up and down the country. For example, in the Northwest and West Midlands, we have quite a lot of homes that are not fit for purpose. And we're lobbying for or calling for a retrofit strategy, a way of rethinking and reimagining these dilapidated buildings and bringing them up to standard for the future. And that has an impact with jobs, job security, healthcare. So basically, what I'm trying to say is that the built environment is an indicator for prosperity. And if you invest in it, you're investing in the economy.
We've been to lots of various nations today, seeing projects being done, lots by British architects.
Yeah.
So you have a job also being there, kind of flying the flag for them internationally?
Yes, I very much so. British architects have a fantastic story to tell. Our universities, our practices, our world leaders, and we want to continue to be world leaders in the space.
And that's all for this week's special episode of The Urbanist, coming to you from MIPIM in Cannes. For more from the world of urbanism, subscribe to the podcast so you get new episodes every single week. Today's show was produced and edited by Carlotta Ribello in Cannes and by David Stevens back in London. Sorry, David. I'm Andrew Tuck. Goodbye, and thank you for listening, City Lovers.